Due to the graphic nature of this program, listener discretion is advised.
To the west of the great continent of Kern lies the island provinces of Perth, home to brave seafarers, exotic pleasures, storms of swirling magical energy, and cults dedicated to the old gods. Upon these white sands came the Eve's Watch, a band of sellswords and brutes seeking their fortune upon the shores of these lands. Let me tell you of this age of legends, for I and I alone am keeper of their saga. This is their chronicle.
Coo, Geo, you're going to have a second go at this launching your companion up into the tree, correct?
Correct.
Position yourself and make your
reckless
roll.
Attack this time. Trying to get everything I have into it, which was equally just as bad. Be a 12.
Be afraid of what a nat 20 was. A crit fail, you know, okay. That's a 17 acrobatics.
You, again, dip low into a low, low, low squat and rocket up, leaving the ground, launching Ku up into the trees. Ku, this time, you are able to grab a hold of that branch that was your target, and you begin your ascent up the tree. Lovac, as you're scanning the tree canopies, brightly colored birds, monkeys, dangling orbs of colorful fruit, you notice the spyglass come down, landing in a large swath of ferns.
That's disconcerting. The spyglass just fell out of the sky over here.
I'm going to look up.
The tree disappears into the canopy, going far beyond it. You don't see or hear anything. And then the still of the jungle is broken with a shriek. Doesn't sound like Shin's voice. It sounds almost inhuman, almost like a predatory bird on the hunt.
But we don't see anything.
You do not.
I'm going to run over to get the spyglass.
The spyglass, fortunately, is, for the most part, undamaged. There is a very slender hairline fracture in the lens, but it's close to the corner of the housing unit.
The tree's over there. The spyglass is here. So following that line, I'm going to grab the spyglass and look up in the canopy and see if I can find any kind of opening and then concentrate further on. I don't think he could have thrown it this far. I don't know what's going on, but in that line, I'm going to look up that line for any shadows, anything like that. And if I spot something, then I'll bring the spyglass up.
There's very little in the way of breaks in the canopy, but occasionally you'll get a break in the canopy where the sunlight streams through in a slender column. Only a little further ahead, a black shape blots out the sun for just a moment as it passes over.
Okay, then I'm going to bring up the spyglass quickly and follow that line and just keep going until I see another opening and see if I can get some kind of peek at what it was.
Get to another opening. Lovac's running down the trail out into the jungle with the spyglass.
17 for investigation if it helps.
You see again that black shape. This time a little more clearer. It's a wider break in the canopy. It almost looks like that thing you saw early this morning circling the camp.
Tuco had been watching the trail. When he sees Lovac start to break through the forest willy-nilly, he gives pursuit.
Shin, you are in the grasp of this flying creature. It's got you by its feet, almost ape-like feet, the toes ending in these long claws that are buried deep into the front and back of both shoulders. Its bat-like leathery wings beat fiercely as it begins to climb.
What kind of grip does it have on me?
It's a clawed grip, ape-style feet, holding on to you, claws embedded in your shoulders in a firm, tight grip.
Is it tight enough that I have lost use of my hands?
No.
Good. Spells are still in. How fast is it moving as soon as it hits me?
It hits you moving fast, and you're taken totally by surprise. It took you from behind. It is evident that it is climbing to an even greater height. The speed of it now with your weight that it's bearing has slowed a little bit. It's not moving at a high rate of speed, but it doesn't appear as though that's what the intent is. The intent is to climb.
Time for a little Eve's Watch bravery. I'm just going to look straight up and firebolt him. That's a 24 to hit.
That'll hit.
5 points of damage.
You should be rolling two of those, right? Is your fifth level now? Isn't firebolt 2d10?
9 points of damage.
You make those finger pistols like a gunfighter from the Westerns. You lift them up and fire off two crimson bolts of magical energy, striking it square in the chest. It shrieks, this piercing shriek that sounds far too high-pitched for something of such great girth, and it immediately loosens its grip on you, and you begin to plummet. As you plummet towards the canopy below, the air rushes by you, your clothing fluttering during your descent. There's a streak of lightning that you catch in the air. What are you going to do?
A streak of lightning that I catch in the air. Well, what I'm doing is bracing myself to smack into that canopy going as fast as I possibly am and attempt to grasp, because that's all I got.
You plummet through the canopy. There is a large series of crashes and snapping branches as Shin's body emerges through the canopy. There's a cascade of leaves that follow him, and he thuds half on the trail and half off the trail in front of you. Take 27 points of damage from the fall. He's still holding a branch in his hand.
I land unmoving and without making a noise.
Well, Fortune is already heading that direction.
Do I notice this, or am I on like the other side of the tree?
You're climbing up the tree and sending your telepathic message out, probing for Shin. Ahead of you, quite a ways ahead, some 50 or 60 feet, you see something, a large humanoid shape crashing through the canopy and landing with a thud and a woof on the trail, half on the trail and half in the jungle.
I would have to assume that Shin, and I would begin making my way down.
Did he land anywhere close to where I am? Low back and to go, went off through the jungle to try and track the creature. Is he close
by? Maybe 40 feet from you.
I will double move to get to him.
This is nearly impossible to not take notice of.
I'm still waiting for him to come down, because I'm thinking he's going to be falling next.
And you see him start to come down.
Okay, then I will make my way over to Shin.
Shin is laying motionless, totally motionless.
I have to assume I'm the first one to him, because I was following that line the whole time. So as soon as I get to him, I'm going to quickly assess him. I'm going to assume he's severely hurt. So I'll roll him onto his back, make sure his arms and legs are straight, try to pop any bones back into place that seem to be out of place, and put my hands on his chest and call forth all of my power to draw into him for laying of hands.
He is motionless, and you can, as you stare into his face, you can see the life beginning to leave him.
Which is why I'm dumping my life into him.
And that's where we'll leave it for this week.
Lovac is bent over Shin. You can see his hands beginning to get that warm glow that they do when he begins to lay on hands. His eyes are closed, and it looks like he is deep in concentration. There is a warm glow that fills your chest, Shin. The battered and crushed internal organs begin to take on their normal healthy state. Your twisted and broken limbs begin to straighten ever so slightly. And then your eyes burst open. You see Lovac bent over you, and you let out this horrible cry of pain.
Ouch!
As you look up at Lovac, his eyes are completely black. Those beautiful blue eyes aren't there at the moment.
I'll file that away for information after I, stop screaming.
Shin is still quite injured, but he is not dead. There is life still in him, thanks to Lovac. What are you going to do?
Ku's going to keep making his way down the tree. Huxley, how far up the tree is he?
You've only made it up 30 feet. You half climb and half slide, much like a firefighter on a pole.
Oh, then if he's 30 feet, he's just going to jump off the tree and slow fall the damage away and pick up his pack and take off towards Shin, what he thinks is Shin.
Yeah, you would take 8 points of damage.
And no one take any damage.
Yes.
Tuco has his bow out, scanning the skies on high alert.
You don't see anything.
Once I see Lovac, has Shin, well, at least well in hand to surviving. And with Tuco on the way, I will also stand with Tuco to keep an eye out for anything that might be coming in towards us.
The laying on hands gives you 25 points, not counting any minuses that the Game Master might impose because of the rearranging of body parts.
Well, then it's a good thing that I have such low hit points. You've almost filled me up.
Ku, as you approach, that warm glow begins to spread across Shin's body. It appears almost like the shadows from the jungle are being drawn in towards Shin's broken form, crawling underneath him and then out his chest and then back into the forest. Shin, no longer broken and nearing death, sits bolt upright with a gasp.
I slowly turn back to blue. I reach out a hand to him to help him up. You okay, brother?
I still ache a little bit.
Bad going. Step?
No, that was a good step. It was much better than being flown somewhere.
Ah, so it was the creature.
Ku will go into his herbalism kit, look for something for pain, mix something up, hand them over to Shin, take two of these and call me in the morning.
Shin will look at them.
The big one is not oral.
Slide them into a pouch. Save them for later. Somebody else will need them more than I do. If it wasn't that creature, it was very similar.
Great. More than one. Well, our element of surprise is gone. For sure, now.
What creature?
The flying creature that snatched up the princess? Princess Jewel?
They start scanning.
It's one of those.
Can it be now?
Oh, I found this in the woods. He dropped it. I got the spyglass.
Tuco takes it. Stows it in his pack.
You say our element of surprise is lost, but that's still not true. We still have... Were you able to see anything before you were so ungraciously lifted from the tree?
Yes. First note, they've doubled the guard. They've made some of the patrols permanent locations. And they're reptiles? Not draconic, more...
Lizard folk?
Snaky. Not like the lizard folk we've met before.
Can I throw down an arcana check to see if I'm familiar with these types of creatures?
Sure.
Well, we're all well-traveled. I think we all got a shot at that.
And there are at least... dozens of them in the keep.
I'll do a nature check.
30, 20.
14.
Nothing appreciable.
Mule.
18.
You've never encountered anything like what Shin is describing in Hymirin. You've never encountered anything like Shin is describing in any of your travels elsewhere other than Hymirin. You do recall a book, a very old book that you came across in the library in Prenogene's capital, that described these magically created beings back before this new world kind of took hold. They were oftentimes servants of some of the more sinister old gods, snake-like creatures with arms and legs and long tails. But until now, these appear to be just legends. As far as Ku knows, it sounds almost like a poor description of lizard folk. Because you've never encountered nor have you heard of any beings like this in the natural world. You are familiar, Mule, with the common practice of snake worship in many of the less civilized regions of the world, but these are not anything that you are even remotely familiar with, just from that one passage and some passing literature about snake worship. And that's what you come up with as well, Jill. There are snake cults. Oddly enough, where you come from, even though you have no snakes. But that is the best that you can discern.
These are creatures of the old world, from what I've read. This is the first I've ever even heard of them actually being real.
Perhaps summoned by this sorcerer.
Perhaps summoned from another place, or have somehow been secreted away. I mean, this society, or these creatures as servants, perhaps could be hundreds and hundreds of years old.
Were you able to determine how long you think it might take us to get there?
At the rate we're going, at least a couple more days.
Do we have a faster way to travel?
No.
No.
Not that I can do.
Time to beat feet, gentlemen. Let's double time it.
Lord of the Rings running cut sequence.
Yes. Yeah. I can carry Ku if we're running.
I'll say Ku out back. You know, where I'm built for sprints.
So I don't need to carry
you. We're not so good on the long distance runs.
Well, yeah, I'm not so great on the long distance runs, but I can probably move faster than most of you.
If you're fatigued, let us know.
Okay.
I can carry him too.
Yeah. Yeah, I might hit branches.
Tuco's probably the better person for that.
Yeah. I don't want to get hugged.
We'll pick up the pace as best we can. Remember, we don't really have a trail, so Shin is... We'll keep an eye on the orb and make our way in that direction.
Yeah, I have to assume at this point we're just going and using little game trails, breaks in the trees.
in this conversation about going serpentine through the woods to follow trails, Tuco is inspired to say, if you let me go in front, I'll just cut the branches and we'll run in a straight line.
Was that a pun? We're going serpentine through the woods towards a snake fortress?
Yep.
Yes, it was on purpose. Absolutely.
Well, I agree. That may be quicker to mind. We would also need to ensure that we continue to go in the correct direction.
So the person running behind me, tell me if I need to change.
We could definitely go in a straight line. It depends on how long it takes them to chop out between trees.
Or just take the orb with you.
But if I'm cutting branches, it's hard to look at the orb. I plan on running.
Just run through them.
If we're going to have somebody run through things, it should be Geo.
I'll do it.
I like this plan. Let's run.
Let's run.
All right. Give Jill the orb. She's familiar with the use of it anyway.
I'll step aside and let you run. Go 1,000 steps that way, straight.
I'll take his position in the back of the group.
Welcome to Dungeon Radio Hour, an improv comedy podcast set within the world of Dungeons and Dragons, where a group of friends from our world fell into a magical realm and must rescue their friend before finding a way back home. Join our players, Alyssa.
Like, have you been seeing anyone who's, like, new to town?
Andrew.
911, what's your emergency?
Hi, 911. Listen, I can't talk loud. I'm currently inside of a horse.
And Mike, as they adjust to their magical surroundings.
Jeff, don't even go here. This game is rigged. There's piss sometimes. All right.
And a few friends.
What do we say about killing?
Don't do that.
This show is full of ridiculousness.
You know, he was a guy who's just doing his job, but he had a neck and it needed to be strangled.
I roll like a hot dog at a 7-Eleven.
I missed you guys so much. What have you been up to?
We fought Santa and shit.
All this and more is waiting for wherever you get your podcast. So keep the volume up, the dial tuned in. It's time for Dungeon Radio Hour.
Just then it begins to rain.
Yes, it's cool.
Not yet.
Is it just a light rain right now?
Just a light rain right now.
All right, that's fine. We were expecting this. Let's make some tracks, because that also reminds me. A little later today, we may be making no progress, so.
Ku is going to stop and put his oiled cloak on.
I'll throw mine on as well. Yeah, you're going to get shredded.
Not a bad idea. Yeah, I'll do that as well.
Duco as well.
And Geo, your
taking point.
Your objective is to run along the trail, snapping off as many branches with your girth as you can.
Yep.
That should be easy enough. Like a charging linebacker or something far larger than even the largest of charging linebackers or bulls. Geo takes off in a sprint. Surprisingly swift for someone as large as he is. At first, he begins snapping branches as he goes, and then he just charges on in the rain. Looking like he's having a wonderful time. And his girth, snapping branches from the trees. Now, this would be a trail easy to follow for even a blind ranger. But the progress you're making between his snapping off of all the branches, almost 9 feet up from the ground, and stamping down the ground and any plants that have crept across the trail, make the passage far easier. And then, after more than an hour, perhaps even 2 hours of charging through the jungle in the sweltering heat, in the rain, Geo, you burst into a nearly open field of large proportions. There are several trees throughout the field in neat rows, much like soldiers standing at attention. And far across the field is a small stone hut. The trees are of different varieties. You can tell because there's fruit dangling from them, bobbing in the wind. There is a nice breeze.
I'll be heading to one of the fruit trees.
Blowing through the field as the rain goes from a light mist to large droplets that hit your broad shoulders with plops, splattering and showering you with tiny bits of rain.
During that run, we would have to yell ahead to Geo to slow down. His move speed is what, 50?
40.
40.
Yeah.
And your move speeds are?
30.
30.
I would have slowed down.
Another 35.
I would try to stay 10 feet ahead of you to so they did snap back.
It'd be slightly rough ground for him, too. Just slight.
When the rest of you arrive at this field, you see Geo picking bunches of bananas off a tree.
During that run, because it was an hour or two, at some point somebody would have ended up carrying Ku. There's no way he's running for an hour or two.
Tuco.
How do you carry Ku, Tuco?
Heels over the shoulder, he's sitting astride my shoulder. Hands free.
Like a toddler going out for a day with dad.
Yes. And with my strength and my dexterity, I think it would be not require much effort on my part. Because I have a pack he can also rest a little backwards on.
So you're riding, Tuco. A much better run when he picks you up and actually does the running.
Thank you.
Keep an eye out.
Shin will walk down the lane of trees, continually keeping an eye on the little hut, and will stop at the edge of the fruit trees and not actually approach the hut any farther than that.
This appears to be an old farm, long abandoned. There's no signs of activity. The grass is tall. The trees are no longer neatly manicured, the branches tangling within the insides of the trees, lichens and other types of molds growing along the branches. But the fruit looks good. There's bananas and lemons and limes and oranges.
But the fruit tastes good.
The bananas are very good.
Cool. Can you take a look at some of that fruit? Just make sure it's not dangerous.
I'm already testing it.
Before Geo consumes too much.
Yeah, I'm looking at it all. But survival, medicine, herbalism kit?
Whichever you wish.
Okay. Herbalism kit's good. Gives you a plus one.
Medicine's better. Rerolling that natural one with my lucky. 14.
And Tugo, being his close companion at this point, is checking for poisons in the same place. With my survival roll and my poisoner's kit, that's a 14.
It seems fine. You smell it, rub your fingers along it, even take a little taste. Nothing stands out as concerning to either one of you.
We should also check the hut, because this is somebody's farm.
Well, while you're doing that, I'm heading right to the hut.
Me too.
The food seems safe.
Lovac and Moulay, you make it to the hut. The door is hanging ever so slightly off the hinges. The straw roof is battered and with gaps in the roof. The shutters hang from the window frames. It's made out of stones, probably stones that were gathered while they were clearing the fields. It's a small hut, but sturdy, all except for the roof.
We see light, hear noise, maybe smell a cooking fire or the remnants of something. As we approach, I'm looking for any signs of occupancy.
There's holes in the roof, so there is some light, but not the kind of light that a lantern would emit or a candle or anything like that. There's no signs of movement or life in the hut.
You grab the door and gently swing it off to one side so it doesn't come off the remainder of the hinge that's balanced on.
It's a thick wooden door, roughly hewn. You move it easily.
That is the gentlest I've ever seen you do anything.
I don't think I have a response for that.
When you enter the hut, it's a simple hut. There's a bed off to one corner with skeletal remains sitting upright in it. There's a hearth, some old damp wood, a few animals, rodents mostly, skitter off in a panic as you enter. There's shelves with things in jars and ceramic pots. There's some farming instruments in there, but not many. Shovel, rake, broken hoe.
I'm not going to pay a whole lot of attention to the farming implements as I concentrate my attention on the first thing you mentioned, which would be the sitting upright skeleton on the edge of the bed. Stroll over to that. I mean, does it have clothes on it?
Yes, tattered clothes. It's slumped over, almost like an old man trying to get out of bed in the morning, but never quite making it.
Give it a soft touch. I want to knock it over, making sure it doesn't like raise his head going, hey, welcome to my home.
Yeah, common practice in every D&D world. Check the skeletons first. You never know. It appears to just be a skeleton.
Can I kind of scoop my arm underneath its legs and just kind of support its back and gently lift it in one piece up?
Yeah, gingerly, you're able to lift it up and cradle it in your arms.
Did you get the door for me? Is it still open?
Yes, it is still open.
I'll walk it outside, go to the side of the building, chuck it off, and then head back in.
There is, for a moment, this image, Moulay, of Lovac standing there holding a skeleton in his arms, and we can't help but think, that's appropriate. He walks out, like throwing out dirty dishwater, just pitches a skeleton off to the side. It falls in a clatter of bones, and the skull rolls off, facing Lovac.
You hear Tuco yell from across by the fruit, I didn't just run 2 hours so we could dick around here. Let's go.
Is the rain getting heavier? Or is it?
It's heavier than the mist, but it's not a storm yet.
What time of day is it? Are we getting towards dark?
This is early afternoon.
Okay.
Does the hut seem like it could house all of us?
It's big enough that it could house all of you. Whether or not it's ample protection from a rainstorm remains to be seen. It is a thatched roof, which can be quite effective in protecting one from the rain, but there's big gaps where the thatching has fallen in from decay.
Jill will sit there. I mean, do we want to try and ride out the storm here? Because it could be treacherous.
Culmination of this storm might be the end of the ritual.
Also true.
I think we should move on. That's too gross of justice.
Let's grab some provisions. Because obviously...
Fresh fruit. Yeah.
I'm just going to check out the hut, see if there's anything of interest inside.
There's the ratty bed. There's several shelves on the walls containing jars and clay pots.
No obvious weapons, nothing hiding over the mantle.
No.
Nothing check under the bed mattress.
Nothing.
Oh, okay.
It looks just like a farmer's hut.
Shin is going to take a walk around the outside of the hut, examining the outside of the hut. Anything interesting?
There's a small area where there's firewood stacked. But nothing concerning a rainwater barrel that is still catching rainwater all the way up to the tippity top of it, now beginning to slightly trickle down from the rains.
Fill your water skins.
Fresh water.
After Gio would have collected if he would have filled his pack with fruits, he's going to take a walk around the place too.
You hear a loud knocking of a stick against a tree as Tuco is waiting by the exit to the clearing saying, let's go, let's go.
Actually, Ku is going to mentioned to Tuco that there are some molds here that he might want to check.
In another situation, yes, but we're on the clock.
And
yeah, we're not staying here. I'm going to get ready to go.
Cool collects some fruits for himself, advises everybody else to collect fruits, you know, pointing out what's refreshing, what's good for these things. Yeah, and
I'll grab some good protein, fiber, fruit.
Gila's in the middle of eating an orange with the skin on, making a frowny face as he does so.
You're supposed to peel it.
Oh.
Was that the way he ate the banana as well?
He actually peeled the banana. Very gingerly.
I'm going to fill up my skin from the rain barrel, as everybody else filled up
theirs.
And
there's none left for the rest of us.
Well, I'm going to, after they're done, whatever's left in there, I'm going to wash myself.
I was
going to
say, before you stick your head in there.
I figured you'd want to drink it and then wash yourself.
He didn't think of that. He just filled up his skin, waited for everybody to fill up their skin, and then wash.
I will drink the remainder of my water skin before I fill mine up.
This should all take maybe 10, 15 minutes. We're just basically grabbing fruit, grabbing water, chugging some stuff down.
And then you did just run for almost 2 hours straight through the jungle.
It was a daily jog.
A short respite is helpful.
Eat a couple of the fruits after I've filled my pack as best I can and wait over by Tuco.
How's your plate doing? Is it chafing? Can't imagine running in full plate.
No, it's not plate, it's chain.
Oh, chain.
And I have two layers of silk underneath it.
Yeah? Is it comfy?
Still warm, but not bad. Piece of fruit.
Sure. Thanks.
Test the handle on the shovel. Has it started to rot, or is it still sturdy?
The handle started to rot.
But still has some use in it?
Potentially.
And I'll take it with us just in case. It's the one implement we've asked for that we didn't bring with us.
Snatch the shovel up and begin your trip. Gio, as you're refreshing yourself in the water barrel, you are watching through the jungle frogs crawling about on the side of the hut. You reach out to grab one, and then remember Tuco telling you, don't touch the frogs, they're poisonous.
And I won't touch the frogs with my hands. If there's a pitchfork around, I'm going to try to pick up a couple.
What, you're not going to try and use your maul?
No, I want to eat these.
Kicking for dart frogs.
Tuco yells from about 30 feet away, stop messing around over there, let's go.
Eat the poisonous frogs?
If they are poisonous, we don't know.
Tuco knows.
But he didn't say these frogs.
The dumb barbarian strikes again.
I'll make my way back.
You pick up your bunches of bananas that are on the ground, brush off a couple bugs that are crawling about them. And
he's got an intelligence of 10. It should be like 6.
He's just a meathead. He's a gym bro. And walk over to Tuco, who's impatiently waiting with Lovac tapping a stick on the trunk of a tree.
Are we ready?
I look around. Do I see everybody ready?
Ku approaches finally after picking out fruits that he wants to
pick. I'm using a shovel as a walking stick right now, but...
Yeah, we're ready. We're just waiting on Ku. Oh, here he is. Yeah, we're ready. Let's go. Ku, you want to ride? You run it.
Are we running again?
Yes.
As often as possible.
Or do we really need to keep running?
It's the rain's only going to get worse, and running's not a great idea.
As was brought up, the end of this storm may be the end of the ritual.
We got 2 days march, and we got 1 day to get there.
And it hasn't started raining hard yet.
I start jogging.
All right, I'll climb up Tuco.
Let's swing him up on the shoulder. Bang. Let's go.
Gio breaks out into a nice even trot and plunges into the jungle, again snapping at branches and pulling them down as he runs off into the depths of the jungle. You go for another hour and the rain becomes more intense. Larger drops striking the trees and the leaves with such force that they buckle beneath them. And then it begins to come down in sheets. At one point, Geel hits the deck and slides for a while before regaining his footing. The long streak of mud from shoulder to ankle on his back.
Are you still thirsty? Maybe we should walk now.
Now walk.
After that fall, yeah.
After that fall, maybe the footing is not as good as it was previously.
Then we walk.
And Cool jumped down from Tuco.
Into the knee-deep stream that is now the path.
Knee-deep for you.
No, knee-deep for you, I was thinking.
But it was really nice having you in front. I gotta tell you, this trail is almost luxurious after you pass through. You should stay up there.
Okay.
As you press on, the rain becomes more intense, and water begins to flow from the higher points of the jungle down across the trail, making passage treacherous. Streaks of lightning cross the sky, and then the jungle itself takes on a reddish hue, and you can almost feel what you can best describe, those of you that aren't casters, as electricity. The hair on your body begins to tingle and stand on end. Moulay, this is concerning to you particularly, and you as well, Shin.
How concerning is it to the guy in metal?
He is no longer carrying his spear upright. It's now horizontal to the ground, and he crouches every time we slow or stop.
This doesn't feel like so much an electrical storm as it does magical energy.
There are energies here beyond nature.
Visually, how does the red energy that's swirling around compare to my energy red?
It's a different hue, but it does resemble what you saw from the bottoms of these floating rock islands.
How does the energy feel?
The energy feels like someone bore a hole deep into Hymir and released all of the magical energy from the ley lines that crisscrossed the world.
What are the chances those islands move? We got one passing overhead, maybe?
Well, they float.
Potentially. We could be passing beneath one directly.
I mean, we wouldn't see it. There's a storm. There's clouds.
Usually can't see them anyway, so.
I mean, I've heard of the Skylands. Everyone's heard of the Skylands, but I haven't heard of any of them moving.
Well, as long as they just continue to move in a regular pattern and not fall straight down, I think we'll be okay, at least from that perspective.
Do we keep going, or do we hunker down for a bit?
There is. I'll look around. I don't feel like there's any place to hunker, right?
There's a hollowed out tree, maybe a rock outcropping.
And even if we just set up our nets and sit in it, at least we're off the ground and not being washed away by mud and slop.
Yeah, that's a good idea, Koo. Maybe we can look for something. I mean, I'm hoping the storm will kind of come and go, maybe to get out of the worst of it. Look for even a fallen, you know, even like a half fallen tree, natural lean-to, hollowed out tree, rock, something.
As we're walking, that's what I'll just keep doing. I'll look for a place where we can rest.
I think we're all going to be looking for that.
Yeah, so survival.
With heads on a swivel, you press on, looking for something.
I got nothing.
11.
18.
20, 23.
12.
You see a few hollowed out trees, big ones, those really big ones. You think you could probably squeeze the party into, but when you go in and take a look at them, you see Bakwana. Hear the signs of bats in there. Not an ideal place to stay. As Geel is looking about several paces ahead while you're investigating the inside Moulay and Kuko of a hollowed out tree, Geel, you find a stone that looks like it was hand worked. It was a stone column. As you clear it away, there's reliefs on it.
We'll call for party to come over here. I think I found a spot for us.
It's just a stone. It almost looks like a trail mark.
I think I found something that you need to see.
Head on over.
This one doesn't look too good. Let's.
No, I do not like the smell.
Do I recognize any of the drawings or markings in the stonework?
Give me a history.
The natural 20? 20.
You remember this one time that you were nearby the Empire of Swords, hunting down a group of bandits. Moulay was reading through a book that he found that had images of Old Fae City. While you don't know what it says, a lot of these images look like some of the ones in that book that Moulay was going through. As a matter of fact, you think Moulay probably kept that book and has it stashed away somewhere because he really enjoyed looking through that. There's what looks like writing that you can't read, but it looks familiar to you. It looks like much of the writing from the Empire. but just slightly different.
I'll wait for them from over here. I'm going to be acting like I know what this is.
I want to see that. Luke, can I hear that?
Come over and Malay and Tico arrive. Take a look.
Go as well.
So the reliefs here, they're just like what they were in your book.
My eyes glow with interest as I examine the reliefs. What language is it written in?
It's a Fey language. It's pretty close to what the Farinasi people of the Empire speak. The writing is different. It's similar, but not entirely dissimilar. It's similar in the way that Portuguese and Spanish is.
So older, maybe.
Yes.
Shin and I will finally come up to the back end of the party. Oh, Shin, I wonder what he's found to eat now. And I hope he saved me some.
That's okay. I grabbed some extra fruit. If he eats it all, you can have that.
What does the writing say?
Can you read it?
I can read all writing.
Oh, that's right. It's a trail marker that identifies a city. The name you can't really make out. It's a very old trail marker. You do know that from your history books that there was once a great continent here that was fragmented and destroyed, and that's what created the Perthan Islands. You speculate this may be a remnant of one of the cities from the population that lived here.
Before the destruction.
It does identify the city as being a scant few miles away. The measurement of distance may be a little bit different than what is used to measure distance now, but it appears as though it might be closer to you than the farm.
And is it in the direction that we're heading?
Yes.
Further along this path, there may be the ruins of a city that we could perhaps take shelter in.
That's exactly what I was going to tell them.
What manner of writing is it?
It's like old Farinasi.
Very old.
Before the destruction of the world.
Farinasi.
How does this language compare to the language in the Red Book?
Oh, it's very different. The language of the book you're referring to is vulgar and sinister. It's very different than any of the Fey tongues.
How does the writing appear to our Farinasi companion, Shin? Or how does he see it or read it?
I can read bits of it, but then there's that weird stuff there that just doesn't show up in anything I'm used to.
You can make some guesses as to what it may mean, but it is, as you said, a fragmented reading of what the inscriptions say.
A religious check. Are there stories in our religion of fleeing at the time of the destruction?
Oh, yeah, they're very well known. The elven people of Hymirin all evolved, I guess, for lack of a better term, from the destruction of this continent and evolved from these people. They fragmented in a schism a long, long, long time ago. Some took on a more warlike stance, the Farinasi people. Others chose to live in unison with nature, the Valanasi people, and then the Saranasi, who actually live on the largest island in this region, chose to adopt a more primitive lifestyle, one with much fewer magic than the other elven people.
If there is a Farinasi city from that era in this area, that would be a great place to seek shelter, because odds are the Consilium has not stripped it bare.
Perhaps there are some opportunities for fines, but at this point, shelter is my nearest concern.
Let us all remember, if we can take shelter, so can everything else that's hiding from the storm. So be on highest alert.
If there are structures here, I expect them to be at least partially populated by something. So we'll take care. Jill, if you'd like to lead on.
And I'll continue in the direction that we're supposed to.
Still looking for shelters?
Yep.
13 for me this time.
21.
12. I'm at the back of the party. I'm paying attention to the woods, not looking for shelter. I'm looking for threats.
9.
As you press on, there's few better opportunities for rudimentary shelter. The storm picks up, becomes intense and chaotic. The wind and the rain make it difficult to see. The wind is driving the rain at you at an angle. Branches and leaves are beginning to fall, and the trees are swaying frighteningly. There's cracking in the jungle, and you can hear tree falls.
Jim, what is our light level?
The light is almost all but blotted out, except for this red glow. There's a constant crackling of magical energy. Lovac, you've noticed that red magical energy begins to swirl about. There's tiny bursts of flames on the trees that are quickly extinguished, and other places throughout the jungle. Not an earthly flame like you would have in a hearth, but a magical eruption of flame-like energy.
When we finally get the file back in, I'll point that out to Shin, who's probably right in front of me, and ask him to pass the information forward. Keep an eye out. If someone bursts in the flame, just stand there. He'll go out.
Don't worry about it.
Succinct advice, little back. Thank you.
Geo, you press on, snapping away a great branch that grows across the trail and actually lifting a small tree out of the way. And as you get up from your crouched position after moving the tree out of the way, you stand, and before you is a sprawling city of white stonework. Aqueducts and raised roadways, tall buildings all being overtaken by the jungles, but the buildings still look as sturdy now as the day they must have when they were built. And that's where we'll leave it this week.
Join us every other week as the Eve's Watch continue their adventures in Perth. Thank you to our patrons. Find us on Patreon to join the executive producers team and support the podcast. Our cast, Bill Robitaille, Louis Aponte, Frank Whedon, Jared Parker, Marcus Holt, Sin Morse, our DM, Scott, and me, Nova. Thank you, our listeners, for joining us every other week.